This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Welcome to the show, gearheads. We just watched the Formula One Dutch Grand Prix. Max Verstappen wins at home, and it was a fantastic race. This is John Massengill sitting in the studio with Jonathan Green, Les Kaiser. We have Bob Varsha over Zoom, and we will have Chris Medlin live from Zandvoort here shortly. And gentlemen, it was a very, very fun, exciting. My notes, about halfway through, I just gave up. I was like, I can't watch the race. Tweet and keep up with what's happening.
I've got some scribbles.
But it really was.
Pizza and pepperoni. Okay.
It was exciting. And I'll tell you, the strategy blunders that we saw today from Mercedes and Ferrari, but they also contrast with the strategy of Red Bull, Jonathan.
Yeah. Again, you know, I said that at the beginning, this would be a race of strategy. And at one point before that virtual safety, before Bottas goes off, you were looking at a situation where Hamilton was honing in on chasing down Verstappen for the win.
I found her name. Hannah Schmitz.
Yeah. She's the
principal strategy engineer.
One of the strategists.
Yeah, she's good. She's done a heck of a job. And she did it again today.
Yeah. Bob, are you familiar with her work?
Yes, I am. She's one of two strategists, actually. I saw an interview with her in which she said they alternate. She's married. She has a family. She doesn't go to every race. But when she's not at the racetrack, she's in the war room at the Red Bull headquarters. And she and her opposite number, and all credit to them for what they do. But keep in mind, Red Bull has a room full of engineers and computers running constant simulations throughout the race. Yeah. What's the lap time? What are the gaps? What tire are we on? What's it look like for the rest of the race? So it's a huge effort by Red Bull, something that I don't think anybody other than the big three teams can do unless you have a really, you know, phenomenally talented individual on strategy. And strategists, we all know, in all forms of motorsports make a huge difference.
But heck yeah.
Yeah, Hannah Schmidt is a very interesting story when it comes to women in top-level motorsport like Formula One. So
and that's
good
a pressure job.
Oh,
big
my
time.
God. It's a huge job.
And I'll reiterate, because of this short track, these decisions, good or bad, had to be made so quickly. You've got a little over a minute, less than that if your car is halfway around the lap, to make a decision about what you're going to do, pit or don't, tires or not, you know, what are you going to do next? And with a track, I think of Austria, Monaco to some extent, but there are very few places in Formula One where, you know, things are happening like this and you got to make the right call at the right time.
And are we all in agreement that I'm seeing Toto being interviewed now by Sky on ESPN, but are we all in agreement that it was Mercedes that made the wrong decision today?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. I think that's pretty
I agree.
Clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me just run down real
quick. Double stacked. They had a chance to put both cars on the red tires. Russell insisted on the red tires. Hamilton apparently didn't and got what he got. And then he was volcanic on the radio afterward about the bad call.
And that was a very well-executed double stack, but just the wrong tire choices. Let me run down what we got here. So Verstappen wins, followed by George Russell, Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton, Checo Perez, Fernando Alonso down sixth, Lando Norris seventh, Carlos Sainz eighth, Ocon, Stroll, Gasly, Albon, Mick Schumacher dropped to 13th, Vettel, Magnussen in 15th, I think right about where he started, you got Zhou Guan Yu 16th, Daniel Ricciardo all the way down in 17th, Latifi, and then Bottas and Tsunoda out, did not finish. So, but yeah, guys, I think Mercedes made the mistake. Leclerc, I think, had a, you know, pretty quietly pretty good race. What do you think, Jonathan?
Yeah, it was a funny race for Leclerc because Jenson Button said it in the commentary, for the ESPN that we hardly talked about him because he kind of just was there but not there sort of thing. And he came good because of the soft tire situation. He was closing in the closing stages because he too was on that softer tire.
Just looking at the
stats. Made a very strong move on Hamilton for the position late in the race. I thought Hamilton, I think Lewis messed up the restart. That contributed to his woes.
I agree.
I thought he was starting way early on the lap, and I thought, well, that may not work. And then he slowed down through the final corner and then took off with the whole straight in front of him. I think Jenson Button pointed it out on the broadcast, you know, wait, and then go so that, you know, you cut down the gap to the breaking point for turn one so that Verstappen can't get you, hopefully.
But yeah,
that's not how it went.
There's only six laps left. We knew there was a big difference between the medium and soft. One of the things that I wonder is how close, you know, Max has to keep his nose behind Lewis's nose. He clipped it just perfect, it looked like to me. But I was surprised I didn't hear complaining from Mercedes that he jumped the line.
I don't think he did.
I think he was clear, but it was close. But so anyway, the other one was, why not waiting to the very last inch of that line before getting in it? Now, the thing that counters that idea for me was that medium tire might not accelerate as cooled down as it was.
That was what was said in the commentary, and I think that was Lewis's problem, is that soft tire was up to scratch, and it's always been a problem for Mercedes, particularly to get both the hard and the medium up to temperature.
Heating the tire.
Mm-hmm. We've got a good call here. Dixon Smith on YouTube says that safety car was called way too late, almost an entire lap too late. Do you agree or disagree?
What do you think, Bob?
You mean the safety car was brought on track?
Yeah, too late. They messed about, because Bottas was sat there for a while.
Yeah, he did. I don't know. What was the impact of the alleged late call on the safety car?
Well, I guess you could argue.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, Sainz had to give back the position to Ocon, I think it was, because he was deemed to have passed under yellow. I don't know. I didn't think it mattered. I thought it was interesting that there was so little attrition in this race, but the two occasions of attrition that we had, both Tsunoda and Bottas, had a huge impact on the race. Perhaps as it should be.
Same guy said, good question. Did anyone end up telling us what happened to Tsunoda?
I don't know. Do you know, Bob? Did anybody get the final?
No, they were investigating Tsunoda's problems. I don't know that a decision has been handed down yet. And let's not even get into the irony of Lewis Hamilton's old teammate bringing out the safety car that cost Lewis Hamilton the race.
Yeah. We have a caller on the line. We have Jim from right here in Austin, Texas. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Hey, love the race today. Listened on the radio for the first time this year. I'm usually watching live or on YouTube TV. Very exciting race. Probably the best one so far this year. Lots of action. Just really, really enjoyed it. A lot of guys mixing it up. Some things were unusual that we haven't seen this year. It was just a fantastic listen on the radio.
Are you a longtime fan or a new fan?
I would say that I came back to the sport 3 years ago with Drive to Survive, watched a little bit, you know, maybe 20-some years ago, but definitely all in. Do not miss a race. Looking for a good finish, although Max pretty much has it wrapped up with that 9-point lead.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, Jim. We appreciate it. And you're gonna go to Coda. You're gonna go to Austin here since you're in Austin.
I'm working on getting tickets. Hope to be there. Should make it happen.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, Jim. We appreciate it.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jim.
Yes. A lot of new fans from that's the second person we've had that said that they were a fan before, but reignited by Drive to Survive.
I have to say, I watched another episode last night. I actually seen some of it before, and you know, I just come away tingling, going, "God, bring it on!" Because it is so well done.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, I'm anxious for the next season to come out. This year is really interesting.
Which episode did you watch?
Season 4, episode 4. I highly recommend it. Listen to the chatter between how Ucali were. Urakali were dispensed out of Formula One by Haas.
I know. We need to really analyze this because there were some very interesting comments that I don't want to go into because we need to analyze
it. Have a look at it for yourself.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that the opportunity that they had when war broke out, so to speak, was just exactly what Gunther needed.
Yeah, and what Mazepin's father was saying to Gunther. We need to go back and listen
to
that.
Yes, we do.
But yeah, very, very interesting.
By the way, quick notice point, 30 points now between Ferrari and Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship.
Oof. Hey, we got Chris Medlin who's joined us, and very interesting. Hey, Chris, is your mic on? Because apparently he sent in a very interesting Ottmar post-race interview with a strange interruption. Maybe, Chris, are you there, buddy?
I am indeed. How are we all doing?
I'm good. What'd you think of the race, man?
Promised a lot, didn't it? It had its moments. I heard you guys saying that the Bottas safety car cost him the race, but I think it gave Merck a chance to get back into it after the earlier VSC from Tsunoda cost him the race. I think if that had run clean when the Mercs were on the hards, then that was going to get very, very interesting. So that's the one that hurt. And I did catch Mario Isto a bit earlier, and I'll try and get him to chat to us properly, but he kind of said what was good is that all three compounds were working, and he wonders if Hamilton and Mercedes went for that strategy because they saw Alonso fit the hards and make them work. So very interesting the way that played out. But you mentioned Ottmar Szafnauer. We spoke to him pre-race, and then I just timed my exit from the media center after the race and bumped into him then. And the FIA president decided to join us at one stage very briefly. See if you can work out what he was on about.
Ottmar, you said to us on the grid that you were going to have to maybe find a way through on either strategy, or if it wasn't going to be strategy, then perhaps you could do it on track. I'm not quite sure which way you'd attribute getting past the McLarens, but both cars in the points, you must be very, very happy with that result.
Yeah, both cars in the points and well into the points, and outscoring our immediate competitors is what we really wanted, and it's what we achieved. So, good day.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about what this team does off track. We mentioned it in Spa, but the way the trackside engineering team performs and the way you execute your races is very, very impressive. That must be something you're very happy with.
Yeah, and also the car is performing well. We keep bringing developments to the car, and ultimately that's 80 to 90% of this game. the 10% of drivers.
It's just the FIA president Mohamed Bensoulayem coming to congratulate. Sorry, Mr. President, what was that?
He wants the driver, a super license. So we will see. We will follow. But you know, he's fair. He said we don't want to break the rules.
Exactly.
We want to be a fair FIA that has the rules and implement the rules. And I do respect this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Some kind words there from Bensoulayem to Ottmar. And Ottmar, I mean, he's talking there about super license and drivers. Do you head back to the factory now? What do you do next for what I'm sure is going to be a busy week ahead of Monza?
Yeah, I go back to the factory for 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at the factory, Thursday out to Monza. It's a busy time of year, 3 races in a row. After Monza, we've got a little break before we fly off again to Singapore and Japan. So a little bit of time to keep pushing for developments for this year and make sure we're on track for next.
And then if we do look at the driving picture, when do you expect to make a decision? Do you need to make it quickly or hope to?
That's a good question. I think we can take our time. We've got a sought-after seat, and we should just take our time and make a good informed decision, which is what we'll do.
Well, then I'm sure I'll pester you a lot about that in the coming weeks, but thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Chris, what do you make of Ben Salim's comment?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know if it's a reference to Herter and the super license talk there. I don't know if it was in reference to a joke that Otmar once won so he could go driving and he was trying to be funny. I really couldn't tell, to be honest. But Ben Salim does like to make the point regularly about how he wants the FIA to be. And I think he saw a microphone and thought, it's my chance just to make sure everyone knows I want a fair FIA. So that's all I took from it, really.
I guess, yeah.
We'll take it.
Yeah, why not, I guess. But I wanted some clarification.
I thought it was totally aimed, well, two points he was trying to make. One was the Herta super license situation, and the other one was the contract recognition board has ruled that is done. We have our rules. We obey them, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, trying to hijack the interview to make that point is a little tacky, I think. But, he wanted to make both those points, that Alpine is going to have to obey the rules and get itself another driver, and Herta is going to have to obey the rules and get himself a super license.
Drew, in the
comments. That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, I didn't think about the
CLB. More likely. Yeah.
Drew in the comments says, Herta to Alpine confirmed first by Speed City.
Thanks, buddy, but I don't think that's what happened.
All right, guys, coming up after this, we're going to have Chris continue hunt through the paddock.
Pick through that one.
Yeah, pick through that, too, and we'll be back right after this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell FIA and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
Come around. Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Hey, guys, I want to give a shout-out to, I think, our first fan ever, after your mom and dad, Jonathan, Kevin Kelly. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Kevin Kelly.
All righty, Kevin.
Nice work, Kevin.
Les, you had a comment.
I got to give a personal shout-out. While we're doing this, I got to thank so many people for yesterday. I hosted a Make-A-Wish event for a young man, and you know what? Our buddies at Edge Addicts, Cirque the Americas, Petrol Lounge, S's Racing, delivered an amazing day for this guy to forget about his complicated life, I call it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. You also had a comment on Facebook that you wanted to read, too.
Yeah, I got to read that one. So that was pretty cool.
Who was it?
This is Trevor. Trevor, thanks. You know, there's a funny meme that we stuck out there, and Trevor jumps in and says, the horse on Ferrari's logo could strategize better than Ferrari. Winner.
Yep.
Yeah.
By the way,
that's pretty good.
Just again, another update. Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez now on identical points, 201.
Oh, wow. Okay. I meant to look at that. What about Constructors' Champ? Have they updated?
Yep.
Not that we really need to.
Well, what is interesting is the Mercedes are 30 points behind Ferrari now, and that's doable.
Yeah, absolutely doable. Although now they're on the same level playing field with strategists, apparently. we don't know what's going to happen. What about the comment on Leclerc's team radio? I want to ask you about what you think about this, Bob Varsha. It said on Leclerc's radio, they came over at lap 43 and said, the Mercedes is faster than expected to Leclerc. What do you think, Bob?
Don't bother me. I'm doing math, and it's very difficult for me.
I saw you had your head down.
He's tying his shoes.
I think what this is, the Mercedes is quicker on the hard tires than we anticipated, and I think that's when they, along with, you know, with everybody else watching the race, thought Mercedes can win this. In fact, they might even be able to go 1-2 because of the lap times they were putting up on the hard tire. And that was before it all went south with the safety car and VSC incidents, and things happened as they happened. But to Jonathan's point, we all realize that Max Verstappen has checked out in the Drivers' World Championship, but there's a heck of a battle going on behind. We have a tie for second place among the drivers. Carlos Sainz and George Russell are just a handful of points behind Perez and Leclerc. I mean, this is going to be interesting watching this all go down to the final race of the season.
Yeah, come Austin, I think it's going to be very interesting, actually, because there's going to be, I mean, Lewis is on 158, and Lewis is back in the game. All right, forget today for a second. But Lewis is either going to want to do one of two things. He's either going to go back home and sulk, or he's going to come back out fighting.
He'll come back out fighting. He always does. I know he can be a little punched on the radio sometimes, but we'll come back at fighting. Hey, we got a caller.
Well, at least he knows he's got the car for it now.
Yeah, exactly.
He right. just
and it's capable. And let's face it, this is rare for Mercedes to make a strategic mistake. Yeah. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, true.
We got a caller. We got Joe. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show. What'd you think of the race today?
I love the race. Excited for Max to win at home. Long-term fan of Formula One. Although I get frustrated watching on TV, I find that the commentators are extremely biased to Lewis. What do you all think?
You could ask the Doyen of commentators in America that question. He's right with us.
What do you think, Bob?
I respectfully disagree. Keep in mind, these are British commentators talking to a largely British audience.
Yeah.
And Lewis is a national treasure, a national hero. And a seven-time world champion, an historic figure in the sport. He's won more races, won more poles, led more laps, scored more points, on and on and on and on. He is a phenomenon on the order of all the great champions, including Senna and Prost and Michael Schumacher and so forth. I mean, one of the challenges of being a commentator, I can tell you from first person experience, is it's hard to give everybody they want in a broadcast from the least experienced to the most sophisticated fan. And knowing that fans come in with a chip on the shoulder about their particular favorite driver. If you say anything marginally disrespectful about that driver, or you praise one of his opponents more than you think he should, it's very easy for people to start saying, oh, you're biased, you're biased, you're biased. It's our job not to be biased. And I think all of the top announcers in the sport are not biased toward anybody.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bob, and I'll back that up as somebody who also is under that situation.
You've done it as well.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, it's very hard. And in terms of you want to put the energy and the excitement, and you want to have your audience go with you, and you know, you play to your audience. That is important. Mm-hmm. But you have to remain as unbiased as you can. Joe, I would say if you are a long-term fan, I have one answer for you. Try F1 TV Pro, the subscription thing.
Yeah, good point. I was thinking.
Because, A, they had Alex Brundle on this weekend with Sam Collins, who's very good on the technical side. They swap commentary between Tom Gaymore, who's British, and Ben
Edwards.
But they also bring in quite a few different people each week. Likewise, our Radio 5 Live have different guests. Julian Palmer, I think, is very good and not biased particularly in any way because he was an ex-driver. But shop around a little bit. Don't necessarily always listen to Sky's coverage because you're right and Bob's right. They are. I've worked for Sky for 10 years. You know, they are primarily working to that British audience, but because they have such a large investment into Formula One, some 80 people on site, you've got to think that that's why New Zealand, Australia, and to a certain extent here in America on ESPN are taking that coverage. Just an explanation, not something that says that you're not right in what you say.
Yeah, Joe, and who's your favorite driver? You're from Indianapolis, I see, so you know your motorsport.
Yeah, so my driver is Fernando Alonso.
Ah, well, you can't go wrong there. We all love Fernando. Hey, Joe, are you coming to...
But we're not biased toward Fernando.
We love all the drivers. Hey, Joe, are you coming to the USGP here in Austin?
I would love to. I'm going to need to add it to my travel plans.
Well, how about
what are you doing for the rest of the year?
Yeah. How about if you stay on the line and we'll give you a pair of tickets to come to Circuit of the Americas for the United States Grand Prix to the sold out.
Yes.
Once again, probably 400,000. Well, 406,000 now that they've added this 6,000
seats. Yeah, and that sold out. Like,
I know, that sold out.
Hey, Joe, what are you going to do with those
tickets? Thanks for listening. We really appreciate you being a longtime fan, like you said, and hang on the line and we'll get your info.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I would say, better book that hotel quick.
We got Chris Medland. Chris, I'm going to ask you to hold for just a little bit longer. He has a great interview with Helmut Marko. But we got Corvette Mike. He's been holding for a long time.
Hey.
Mike, we got just about a minute or so. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, just out here living a dream, watching racing, listening to you guys, enjoying everything. And Ferrari just can't seem to get it. I told Trevor that was a prancing horse.
Yeah, well, where are you calling from today? You on the road today in your truck?
Right, yeah, I finished up in Delaware. I'm in the Shenandoah Valley, headed back to Kentucky. And I wanted to let the mayor know that the Flat Rock Racing track out at the Cumberland Plateau, they broke ground earlier this year. They expect to generate about $93 million in their first 5 years. And they hope to have it completed maybe as late as the first quarter of next year.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up. I was actually with somebody yesterday who will be going out there and helping with the first few major races out there. And they're definitely courting MotoGP hard. I was told that.
All right. Well, hey, we got thanks, Corvette Mike, buddy. We'll see you on the road. We got Chris Medlin, who caught up with Helmut Marko. And I want to hear, Chris, why don't you set this up for us and tell us how it went?
Yeah, so Helmut was chatting away to a group of press about today's race. It was very interesting, so I did ask him about that. But then I thought, well, we like to know about Colton Herta, don't we? And we found out quite a bit about where things stand with Red Bull and Colton Herta and how soon we should know anything for definite. So take a listen to this. Dr. Marko, 4 wins in a row for Max now. I mean, this title looks like it's going to be done sooner rather than later. How well is he driving? How impressed are you with the way the team's performing?
Both. The team is doing a fantastic job. You know, we had a troublesome Friday. We recovered. He was on pole position. There are no mistakes in the strategy. The pit stops are working. The only thing which surprised us that the hard, the white tire performed much better on the Mercedes than on our car. That we couldn't foresee, but we reacted, and I believe also without the safety car, we would have won this race.
Yeah, it looked like you had it covered, but were Mercedes going to be a bigger threat, do you think, without the safety car on those hard tyres?
It would have been a bigger threat, yes. It wouldn't have been that easy because Hamilton was on old tyres and hard tyres. The warm-up of the hard tyres was, so he didn't have a chance.
And I've got to ask you on behalf of all of America, because they're very excited with you at the moment with your interest in Colton Herta. What's the latest there? Because a few of your, a few of the other team bosses are saying that they don't think he should get a super license.
We looked at the regulations, we discussed it with the FIA, and because of COVID, it's a special regulation that you can take 3 years before, and also if one result is not maximum points, if it is outside the driver, they can keep the points. So it's nothing unreasonable. He won seven IndyCar races, I mean, and that's comparable to Grand Prix races. So it would be a shame if he wouldn't get the super license.
Is it as simple as if the FIA give him one, he will be in an AlphaTauri next year? Is that the only sticking point?
Astonishing enough, all the parties and teams involved, we found an agreement.
So how soon do you expect an answer then on that front? Because I guess you'd like to run him in some FP1 sessions this year as well in that case.
We have to get a definite answer, and I think it should be by Monza.
Okay, so in the coming days we can look forward to hopefully some news on Herta's future.
Monza, I would say.
And does that mean Pierre definitely to Alpine, or does that have to wait?
No, if the team works, then it happens in Monza, also for Pierre, of course.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Wow.
Whoa.
That is an exclusive.
You heard it, folks.
You heard it, folks. Thanks, Chris Medlin.
Wow, Chris.
I hate to say it. Wow. But
just the super license part to sort out now, isn't it? Which is the bit we were talking about earlier. But yeah, that shows you how close it is.
But Chris, I'm going to say something in a minute which you haven't heard, but why does Helmut Marko, given the plethora of the stable that he has, and we talked about loyalty, and Liam Lawson got a drive in that car the other day, why does he want Colton so bad when he's got to then, you know, he's got the same problem Zach's going to have if he gets Colton?
Well, he hasn't really got the problem in the sense that clearly it's lined up with AlphaTauri for Gasly to go to, with Alpine for Gasly to go there. That would, you imagine, bring some money in to AlphaTauri and Red Bull. And you know, Gasly's not getting promoted to the Red Bull seat, but Colton could be good enough to perform well in AlphaTauri and get a future Red Bull seat in a couple of years. That's what they want to find out. And don't forget, the title sponsor of that Red Bull team is Oracle. So an American driver in that car would be a match made in heaven with the sport growing, if he's good enough. And what AlphaTauri is there to do is find out if he's good enough.
All right, let me riddle you. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I was just going to say, it ties into what we said in the pre-race show about, and Chris led this discussion, about how IndyCar racing generally is undervalued in the point system that eventually grants a young driver a super license. I've seen it written that Red Bull is not happy with the status of their junior drivers, which is to your point, Jonathan. They don't think the guys in their stable are ready, but it appears that they think Colton Herta is the finished product, if you will. He is the best option available to them. And so they obviously want to let no stone lie unturned in terms of getting Colton Herta into the Red Bull universe.
All right, let me throw this at both of you. And I've been thinking about this one and threw it out the other day and everybody went, what? How about, okay, Colton gets his super license. Andretti says, oh, you're taking my driver. And Helmut Marko and Dietrich say, you know what, Andretti, why don't you take over Toro Rosso stroke AlphaTauri and bring Colton Herta with you, and we'll give you our franchise with the money that you're bringing, the Oracle and the so forth, and Red Bull's second team becomes Andretti's team with partnership with Red Bull, because their 50% partnership with Porsche looks as though it might have gone south. How about that?
And what did you say about the second driver?
And the second driver could easily be Sargeant.
So the Andretti team to summarize, Andretti team take over AlphaTauri and have two American drivers.
Correct. And Andretti gets his team. Nobody has an extra franchise.
I like your theory, Mr. Green.
And Red Bull are the only team really outside of Sauber, which failed, and outside of Haas, which failed, could do that for Andretti.
What do you think, Chris?
I think we're getting a bit carried away, chaps. I can see the logic. I've actually, earlier this week, I kind of had that logic put to me, and a few people said, well, you know what, this all adds up. Don't forget as well, Andretti and IndyCar, powered by Honda.
Yep.
Currently, AlphaTauri running Red Bull powertrains, which are Honda badged or rebadged Hondas. And Honda are considering their involvement, how much they get involved, whether even they could take over a team or what they could do with being so successful right now. Then I did put that to someone with good knowledge of the situation and around Colton, and they said, no, they think this is totally independent of any Andretti entry, and all of that would be much bigger picture that would take a lot longer, and they hadn't really heard much on that front. They think this is a straight driver interest thing. Helmut does like taking gambles on drivers.
Yes, he does.
He likes to give them chances, and he hasn't been able to do that recently, has he?
No.
It's been the status quo. They've had Pierre for a long time. I think he's a bit energized by, well, you know what, let's try it. And also, that would be another very Red Bull-esque thing to do, to get an American into F1 before any other team did. Yeah. When other teams have been, been trying hard.
Scott Speed.
All right, well, we are going to, when we come back, we're going to take a pause and digest all of this in our heads. And when we come back, we'll continue to break down what we think is the future. Back after these messages.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstott Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstott beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me, was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in, because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com. Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
What'd you say, Jonathan? Mario?
Well, Mario, I'm just wondering how many laps on that on that two-seater car, he gets in. I mean, he must be close to a super license, and he's definitely been passed to drive. So.
Oh, man. I tell you, when I was out there doing that with them, didn't get to ride with Mario, missed it by one spot, but he stays in that car a long time. Just like the paddock. We talk about Mario Andretti being one of the most hospitable, friendly guys in the paddock and staying there till the last guy comes out. He did the same in the car, and he just ran and ran and ran. It was so incredible and fantastic.
Saw him in Nashville, yeah. He was doing the same in Nashville. It's amazing.
I was with Harvey Wallbanger, Davey Hamilton.
Harvey Wallbanger, is that what you almost said?
Yeah.
But I tell you what, that interview, let's just get back to the seriousness side. That interview by Chris Medlin has just opened up and confirmed what we all suspected, which is because Gasly surely must be going to Alpine now. And his last comment was, I hope it goes well, and we will know by Monza. So we will know next weekend.
Wow.
Another part of the jigsaw.
Mind blowing.
And Sonoda, as you rightly point out, is not confirmed. But what Chris said about the Honda connection is there. Like I said, you've got waiting in the wings, the likes of Pato O'Ward and Alex Palou. They have not got, well, Palou is still sniffing around and is definitely qualified. And there are others. No one's mentioned the young Brazilian who's killing it in F2.
He's got the championship. It's going to be a miracle if he doesn't win it.
Sargent's still on Williams's books.
Yeah. Yep. And still sitting third, but... Chris, are you still there out in Zandvoort? I see your mic is muted. Oh, there he is.
Oh, I'm still here. I'm furiously tweeting. Sorry.
Chris, riddle me this. If that's just a theory that Gasly goes, could Colton jump into the seat, let's say for the US Grand Prix, just for the sake of argument, would that give him enough points by doing a full weekend, race weekend?
No, because he couldn't do the full race weekend because he doesn't have the super license.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. That's a chicken and egg.
So, but the sooner they could get him in, the more points they could put on him. He can get one super license point per FP1 he does, as long as he does at least 100 kilometers and doesn't make a mistake in terms of getting a penalty point during that session.
So that's shoo-in then.
Well, yes and no, because he's technically on 32 right now. So if he doesn't get an exemption and he does the remaining seven, which would be brave to do without the exemption, leaves him with 39. So he's one short.
Yeah, but that'd give him 39 points and $30 million.
Uh-huh.
I think that automatically gets you a super.
Well, he's also, sixth in the IndyCar Championship right now with two races to go. Is it conceivable?
No, he's down in 10th. He's 10th right now. He can't get to a point where he would score more super license points than he had from 2019.
Okay.
So he can't actually improve on that 32 right now.
He's got to drop it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a shame that it plays out like that because it would be fascinating to watch. Can you imagine if the whole F1 paddock was watching every IndyCar race to see if Hertha got the points or not? It'd be remarkable.
Right. You know, it's apropos of nothing. IndyCar has a hybrid driveline in the pipeline for a close future season. I wonder if that will change IndyCar racing in the minds and hearts of the skeptics from Formula One and the FIA and what have you, if they're running a similar concept in power units to Formula One.
I think the biggest sticking point from the FIA's point of view comes from the fact they don't have full control over IndyCar, the way it runs. You know, they don't write all the rules and regs. And so they then say, well, we can't guarantee you're doing things the way we kind of want to train people to do them or have people do them. We don't homologate all of your circuits. So at the moment, there are asterisks by the super license points that exist saying only if all the road courses are on grade one FIA circuits, that sort of thing. There's details there. That's how they get a little bit of kind of approval to say, yes, we are happy with the way this championship runs and the standard of it and all of that. So I think that's why they're reluctant to go full in on it with points, because they also then go, well, what if we're giving every driver in the top 10 40 points? But IndyCar decides it's going to be an ovals only championship, and then you're going to have a very different type of driver in that championship, aren't you? So,
yeah, good point.
I could see where that gray area comes from. It's not as simple as, you know, just give it more points and get on with it. But I think everyone's recognized recently that it's not well balanced at the moment.
I wonder if there's a way that you could consider three Grand Prix style tracks versus non-oval tracks in Indy to be worth a point or something of that. you know, get three wins.
I know where you're going. I mean, yeah, I when Chris was saying that, if they went all oval, they're not right now, obviously. And the you know, maybe it's just a moving target a little bit, you know, because how long have those points been set like that in the super license world where IndyCar's not weighted very high?
Very good point. That's something Fred Vasseur said. It's like, you know, we have to keep reacting to this and be fluid, because at certain times, certain championships will deserve maybe more than at others.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a fair discussion as well. It shouldn't be set in stone and that's it forever, because otherwise nobody will ever go down certain routes, and that would be wrong as well. Hmm.
I love some of these comments on YouTube. Dixon Smith, putting the cart before the horse, but is Brian Herta going to be Colton's race engineer? Andy P says, loving the Herta news, but just hope he's ready for the high pressure environment that the Red Bull camp comes with. And that is very true.
Yeah. Ask Albon and Gasly about that.
Yeah. Dixon says, you think think Ricardo and Mick Schumacher will both be out of F1 next year?
Ooh, no, Mick Schumacher to Williams and Ricardo to Haas, he who lasts longest. He's going to get to Haas, do 4 years at Haas, and then become Gene Haas's next NASCAR driver. There you go.
And Kevin Kelly's, this is blowing me away. I love this, all this discussion about Herta. Guys, this is amazing. I mean, we just have to step
this Colton Herta story has been around since he got that pole at COTA all those years ago thing.
Oh, yeah. First time.
In fact, since the moment I saw him in an IndyCar, I was standing in that mm-hmm. press room in COTA, and he did his first lap and went straight to the top. And I was like, whoa. Okay, this is a kid we're going to have to watch.
And he continued to hold it. I think the end of the first day of practice, I think it was a half a second ahead, if I remember correctly, on that. And after everybody else got out and got used to it. And remember, that was a one-time shot. That's the only time IndyCar has been to COTA. So it's not like anybody really had significant time on that track. Very few. I mean, Alexander Rossi had a couple of laps, courtesy of Speed City and a few others, but yeah, it was a
Alexander
fresh
Rossi
game.
Drove for us before he drove in Formula One.
That's true. Yeah.
We're still apologizing to the car
and his
owner.
His chief mechanic, right? We've got his car going on I-71.
We put Alexander Rossi in a Caterham road car and ran him.
We borrowed
from somebody here in Austin, and we put him across the Congress Avenue Bridge at 100 miles an hour.
Well, he chose 100 miles per hour. Let's be clear.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't make him do that.
Chief Sevedo, that's not true. We know where he's doing.
We have video proof somewhere in the archive. All right, guys, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue all this back after this.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
This is David Hobbs, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Your old mate David Hobbs bringing us back, Bob.
Shamos.
John, Les, you were just talking about Daniel Ricciardo, and he didn't finish well today. And everybody, you know, Max was talking about how home crowd, all that stuff doesn't affect him, and how the mental side of it doesn't affect him. But it's got to be mental stuff affecting Daniel Ricciardo.
You know, I really do. Feel like there's something going on. He's one of my favorite drivers to talk to in the paddock. And I just feel like he's almost
checked out. Yeah.
He's found beaten down.
Well, for a guy.
I'm not blaming him. It's like Are we to the point of breaking his spirit for this?
You know, he has always lived on, you know, his heart on his sleeve. He's the most affable guy, let's face it, in Formula One, and his teammate, Lando, is pretty close second. You know, this was supposed to be the dynamic duo, and unfortunately he's been taken to the cleaners by Lando, and that's all that Lando should be doing, I may add. And he has lost his mojo for whatever reason. I hope, because of the character he is and because I've known him since he was 14, and he's such a good thing for Formula One, he's so much fun here in Texas when he comes, that he does find his mojo, find a race seat and keep going. That's what he wants to do. I've said it last week, I'll say it again. I think America would be a fantastic home in any form of racing for him.
Yeah, any form.
I mean, we all love the idea of him being with Haas. And so, you know, I removed my fanboy for him out of it, but he brings a veteran racer mentality with him, which I feel like Mick, you know, can't do that. I think, you know, that's who we're looking at is...
I mean, you know, if Mick were to go and he's made himself a free agent this week, he's got out of the Ferrari umbrella. And as we've heard from Gunter, he's not made a decision on it. And I think he's going to wait, which is quite right, because if he waits the longest, he might get Ricciardo for cheap. Ricciardo's got some money in his pocket if he wants to keep going racing, and Schumacher isn't going to be there. Absolutely, a Magnussen-Ricciardo thing would move us forward.
I think two successful racers like that would be great. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I tend to agree. Daniel Ricciardo appears to have lost something. But he was second at Red Bull. His Renault experience wasn't great, and that was mostly due to management, which has been reinforced by the situations of Fernando Alonso and Oscar Piastri. There's something going on in the upper levels of the Renault/Alpine operation that turned him away. And now, if he is in fact checked out here, I think he's doing incalculable damage to his own prospects. I mean, you want a guy with the intestinal fortitude to fight through the struggles. You don't want a guy who's going to check out. And I agree. I think he has. And I think he has trouble specifically with having a really good teammate. So as much as we all love Daniel Ricciardo, to see him come to American racing, whether it's IndyCar or more likely perhaps NASCAR, he's going to struggle there too. And I wonder about how he would react to that. I mean, my old colleague Dario Franchitti will tell you how very difficult it is to make that jump from the open wheel cars to the NASCAR style stock car. And Jacques Villeneuve and Jimmy Vassar and all these guys before him who had the same reaction. This is a very, very different animal, and none of them really conquered it. You know, Juan Pablo Montoya did, but he is an exceptional, almost generational kind of talent. And I don't think Daniel Ricciardo is, quite honestly.
And by the way, how long did it take Montoya? He didn't do it flash in the pan first year by any means.
Yeah. It took a road course for JP to win his first race. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a very sad situation because we all like Daniel Ricciardo, but, you know, maybe it's just not there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it ever was. You know, he won Monza. Everybody points to Monza. But that was after Hamilton and Verstappen managed to take each other out of the race.
Monaco.
Would he have won that race? Yeah.
He got Monaco.
He did win Monaco.
Should have got it twice.
That was top of his game.
Yeah, and you have to remember he's won 8 Grand Prix racing for the likes of Red Bull, McLaren, and Renault. Those are all 3 very, very good teams.
Mm. Go ahead. Hey, guys, we have a caller. We have Mark in St. Louis. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Good. I was just wondering, I was thinking that maybe Ferrari would make a change to their strategy team during the summer break, but obviously they didn't. Is it unprecedented for them to make a change during the season like that?
I don't think. But whether they should do it is another matter. I was surprised, and we all said before the summer break, that Binotto should make some moves, whether it be himself or somebody else, but he came out in the press during the summer break and said there will be no changes.
Okay.
Yeah, we would have to know. It would have to be somebody from inside Ferrari. I mean, there are no silver bullets out there. You're not going to bring somebody in who's instantly going to change Ferrari's fortunes. And we don't know if it's one missing link in that strategy chain or if there's a bunch of guys who disagree over what the strategy ought to be, and that leads to the issues that they've had. It's hard to predict. If there was an obvious solution, I'm sure they'd grab it, but it doesn't appear to be there. And Binotto is taking the heat for it.
Yeah. It seems like today they're just running the race with a whole lot of, it just seemed like a ship without a rudder, you know?
Yeah. It almost feels like they need like a new COO, not necessarily a new strategist, because it's like missing a tire. We've done that twice now. Mm. I mean, if you had somebody that could come in and wrangle, okay, maybe the strategists have their hair on fire because they're not getting it, getting the direction they need.
You mean they need Ross Brawn back?
Yeah, exactly. So they need somebody to...
They need Nigel Stepney back.
Yes, Nigel Stepney. Good one.
Yeah, he was the crew chief. He was the guy who whipped their pit stops into a classic British order.
Yep.
I'd love to know what happened with those tires, because as the commentators mentioned on that TV show, the tires, once you get them, you divide them into sets, and those four tires are joined at the hip from there on out.
Yeah.
So when somebody grabs one tire, the other three guys have to grab the other three tires, because that call's been made. Why that fourth tire wasn't available, I just
doesn't make
know.
Any sense.
Mm-mm.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, this is great. Yes.
Mark, I want to ask you, are you a new fan or a longtime fan?
Well, I'm a longtime fan of racing, relatively new to F1, though.
What got you into F1?
Years. Drive to Survive, and I have an 18-year-old son who actually got me into it. He loves F1, and we talk about it a lot.
Did he get into it from Drive to Survive, or is he? How did he get
he
into
did,
it?
He did, yeah. No, he got into it from Drive to Survive as well.
Well, nice. Mark, thanks a lot. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
It's amazing how many people, and I've met a bunch, who can't even tell you the name of the show. They just know it's that show
it's
that's
that show on Netflix.
Yeah. That Formula One is fabulous. What's the name of that show again? I can't remember.
Yeah.
So it's
I
it's
actually started slaying
impact.
Dragons after Game of Thrones. So.
guys, we
I'm
have,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say we gotta to pause here and you know, we're on the verge of having an American driver in Formula One, first time since Alexander Rossi.
Wow.
And I was just looking, you know, earlier on the pre-show, I was talking about this new segment that I want to call American Drivers in the Race for an F1 Seat. And I had on the list Logan Sargeant, Colton Herta, in kind of in order, and maybe we're obviously going to change that, but Jack Crawford, Juan Manuel Correa, Kalen Frederick, and Ben Benavides, Bob, is who you mentioned to me. I don't know much about Ben, but am I missing anybody? Like, I mean, I know you could.
There's the name I can't pronounce.
Voldemort?
No. Bob, tell us about Benavides, though.
Well, I don't know much about him, and he's not having a very good season. He is 29th. He was 29th in Sunday's race. He's 23rd in the championship. Oh, I know what I want to say about Benavides. John, let's go over his ethnicity and his nationality. What did you read?
Let me find it again real quick, but it was pretty crazy that he had multiple nationalities.
Like four.
Yeah.
He's like a Colombian, Ecuadorian, American, something else.
Yeah.
I've got a good one for you.
Here it is. American, Spanish, Guatemalan racing driver out of Colombia.
There you go.
Colombian descent.
Now, let me give
household
you,
name.
Let me throw one at you. Since the Ferrari movement, since Herta was mentioned, I started looking through the Ferrari Academy and thought, ooh, who's left in the Ferrari Academy? And one of my friends from the Toyota Racing Series, Robert Schwartzman, came up.
Yeah.
And Robert Schwartzman, born in St. Petersburg, but now racing under an Israeli license.
Oh, gosh.
So he is now officially from Israel. So he has kept his standing. But he is a very good driver. He's in F2. And if things start to shuffle around, he could certainly get a reserve, if not a potential driver when the sieve comes through.
Yeah.
But watch out for Robert Schwartzman. He's up there, and he's another one we should be talking about, as we should be talking about Drogovic.
Yeah. And, you know, with Sargeant, Herta, Crawford's looked good. And obviously, Juan Manuel Correa, we talked about in the pre-show. But yeah, after his being part of that horrific crash at Spa in 2019 that took Antoine Hubert's life. He had his first podium this weekend. So that was
second place.
Yep, second place.
Fantastic.
That was good to see that. And And, you know, look, who knows if he keeps progressing, he could be back in the picture as well. But, yeah, exciting news. Hey, guys, I just looked up. We're completely out of time. Thanks, Chris Medlin, for getting that breaking news for us. It's fantastic. Thanks for everybody who tuned in on SiriusXM and watched on YouTube and Facebook and wherever else. And, of course, next Sunday we'll have the big news. So don't forget to tune in, and we appreciate everybody. Thank y'all, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Ciao, y'all.
Happy trails.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.